That's Eric Reed on piano opening up Ahmad Blues, composed by the great one himself, Ahmad Jamal. It's from Eric's 1995 Motown recording, The Swing and I. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And oh my goodness, what a couple of days when they go by. We see so many changes and we can't comprehend how a thing could be so intense and then kind of peter out as if by design. And of course it is by design. We're talking about the chaos that is breeding even more chaos, the chemical attack in Syria, and the fact that the Trump administration, it seems to me, they've been quite successful at keeping our eyes off of it. In a short time, they got the media and everybody to kind of chime in on it and make it almost disappear in just 2 days flat, 2 days from the order by Donald Trump to bomb an airfield in Syria in retaliation for what Mr. Trump says. It still has not yet been proven, pretty much like, you know, the claims that people said that the president made without any proof whatsoever. Same thing happening here, but here's the fact. Here is the sobering fact. The United States officially is at war with Syria. And worse, the situation is escalating and rapidly deteriorating at the same time. 72 hours after blaming President Bashar al-Assad for unleashing a deadly poison gas attack in Khan Sheikhoun, a town under the control of rebels fighting Assad's regime, Trump, on April 6, going into April 7, ordered retaliatory bombing of a military airfield in western Syria. The president's unilateral action has touched off vigorous reaction and debate, both within the world community of nations and at home. So we will talk about it as we began last week. I think we are in agreement that there has been no conclusive proof so far. There has been no conclusive proof offered that President Assad actually directed the bombing of the town, where an estimated more than 100 people were killed in the most ghastly way. It is not the first time that poison gas has been used, either in Syria or elsewhere. And so far, there has been no conclusive proof as to what this gas is. So, one, we don't know who conducted the bombing. We don't know what the gas is, although it is being speculated that the gas is sarin gas and has a nasty reputation. But we also should keep in mind, you know, such a small world, that it was actually during the Obama administration, it was Hillary Clinton and President Obama acting in concert, Hillary Clinton at the time Secretary of State, who approved sending poison gas that was in Libya to the Syrian rebels. Seymour Hersh had written a very extensive article about that. He is a crackerjack reporter. He wrote in 2013 about this, that the Obama administration and Hillary Clinton had actually redirected poison gas from Libya, and poison gas wasn't the only thing. That was the reason in Benghazi for the attack on the so-called compound where arms, munitions were stored for shipment into Syria. But he documented, Seymour Hersh, that the Obama administration, and specifically Hillary Clinton, approved the sending of, in other words, extra, we have a lot of extra poison gas here in Benghazi. Why don't we just send some over to Libya? I mean, to Syria. And to the rebels fighting Assad. So people have an idea that this thing just happened and Donald Trump is being so humanitarian. He talked about it. It's the little babies, the pictures of the babies caused him to order this attack because he said Assad had used poison gas in this attack on this town, causing these deaths of these little babies. I remind you also that if by that analogy, then what are we to think? What was the world entitled to do when it was confirmed by the then Secretary of State herself that in Iraq, the bombings occurring in Iraq caused the deaths of 500,000 children. Madeleine Albright, then Secretary of State, said it was worth it. So we have all this kind of these anachronisms that occur at a time like this. But let's get to this discussion. If we put the pieces together, we see that we can't discount they appear to be different things and unrelated. We come to this point a lot, don't we? Where we have to analyze things, but first put pieces together. Because they all seem completely disconnected, as if there is no way to link them. This happened, as we discussed, practically on the cusp of a major meeting of the G7 nations. And this was going to be an issue of discussing how do these nations, how do they under some kind of leadership or supervision or input from other nations, try to bring this awful state of affairs in Syria under control? As a major vested interest in what goes on in Syria, because Syria, for many reasons, is of strategic value to the leading nations of the world, for different reasons. But in the end, it is the same reason. Syria has what other people want. This struggle involving the President Assad facing off against a whole string of enemies within his own borders, some who are natural enemies, if you could call it that, people who naturally oppose his regime, which he inherited from his father. They think that he's a brutal dictator and that he has had a number of people killed and tortured and so forth. So they are against him. You have the outside agitators who have literally invaded the country in order to seize the country. These would be the people who are affiliated with acts of terrorism. You have al-Nusra, you have al-Qaeda, who have literally just gone into Syria because the country is just so chaotic and carved up. There are people who are being funded by outside sources to take him down. And then you have those countries like Iran and Russia, who have maintained a presence in Syria to support Assad. They contend that these forces that want to take him down and want to assassinate him are operating as renegades outside the law. But we should also bear in mind, in this kind of world, just about nobody's pure. There's no purity to be expected in anybody's actions. There's always a motive. What could the motives be? We talked about some of that. The main thing that I wanted to focus on, and we see how quickly they put a damper on that within a matter of days, they shut this discussion down so that Americans won't persist in asking the questions. What authority, what right did Donald Trump as president have to summarily, essentially declare war? Which is where we are. War has been declared. An act of war has been committed. And without permission and authority from the Congress, and certainly without us, the citizens, knowing anything about it until after it was done. It was a done deal. But that does not remove the fact that we are in a state of war. We have committed a military offensive in a sovereign state. Whatever people want to think about Bashar al-Assad, the fact is that he is a sovereign leader. He heads a sovereign state. It is, we can't deny it at all. It's in a state of total calamity. But then that's what was planned for Syria. Indeed, our rambunctious representative to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, you may remember that I did a part of the program when she was appointed. It took less than a week for her to adopt the thuggish attitude, the aggressive and thuggish attitude of Donald Trump and his administration. She is an embarrassment. You may remember that I brought attention to the fact that she, in her first outing at the United Nations, in her official capacity, said to many members of the body, look, you better back us up. I mean, pretty much this is how she said it. You better back us up because we'll be taking names. And that was her first foray into an international community that isn't accustomed to being talked to that way. She's just as rough and uncultured and completely unused to the fine art of diplomacy. That's not the way you talk in the diplomatic world. She, as I said, the only thing missing was, you know, to open up her purse and pull out her brass knuckles and attack whoever she could find in the parking lot. That's the impression she gave as the official representative to this world body, That was the face of America talking. You better back us up, or because I'm taking names. What the heck is the matter with this woman? But she has said since then that the United States intends to take Bashar al-Assad out, which is, openly making threats. This is the way business is being conducted by the Trump administration. Regime change is what Hillary Clinton used to call it. That's what she called the assassination of Muammar Gaddafi. And we have her successor talking this business of, well, it's pretty much time to take him out. And that is our number one priority. Openly professing a nefarious intent to assassinate, one way or the other, a head of state. Who, by the way, I was looking at some of the statistics in the election, won 88% of the vote. And that some of his most his staunchest supporters were Christians, who felt that he had done more than anybody else to protect their interests, because those are the preferred targets of al-Nusra and the other terrorist groups that are there. ISIS and ISIL and whoever else is in there. So this is the kind of behavior we are exhibiting right at this minute, even though Trump has put the United States literally in a state of war. There is no concern that anything could happen. And we are being encouraged by a compliant press who thought, as Fareed Zakaria said, Trump became a president. He says, the silly toady of a so-called journalist, saying that he was so proud of President Trump. The other one, Brian Williams, you remember him, who told all those lies about his so-called assignment. He described the Tomahawk missiles as being beautiful. This is where we are. They're not hiding this stuff anymore. It's in your face. We're thugs. We love it. And you can't do a damn thing about it. I just want to remind folks that technically, because we are in a state of war, and we have committed as a country an act of war with total disregard for the process in the United States, meaning seeking authorization from Congress and so forth, making the case and so forth, and doing that after having at least gotten some corroborative proof that the allegations are true. We are in a state where it would be perfectly within the rights of Syria, for example, to retaliate. And if not Syria, but a proxy of Syria. In other words, the proxy of Syria would be, that would be at the level of doing this, would be Russia. Would be, or could be, Iran. We're playing a very dangerous game here. So they would be perfectly entitled at any time to take retaliatory action. And then we reach a point where of no return. because the United States, with its arrogance, decides that it can do, it does not have to follow any rules, it doesn't have to obey international law, it doesn't even have to obey its own laws. And it can put us all, not just the United States, but the entire world, put us all at the brink of a disastrous situation. And I'm not over-exaggerating, by the way. In fact, I was reading a piece that said that the United States, by the time this attack occurred, the United States National Security Advisor, Herbert Raymond McMaster, had already had plans to increase the military presence on the ground to 150,000 soldiers. And that those plans were in place by the time Trump said, okay, go ahead. And he said, go ahead, because Trump doesn't have any plan at all. He has no plan. Haven't we said that over and again? This administration has no plan, has no articulated policy anywhere. So it is, we go as we see fit, and probably McMaster was the last person that Donald Trump talked to. And since Trump is absolutely in the process of turning his administration, which is, I mean, it's hostile even to itself. It is lots of fighting. You know, I call him President Chaos. This is a chaotic administration. They don't know what they're doing. They have no articulated plans. I said a long time ago, when Trump looked like he was going to win, and even after he did win, I said, he thinks he's president. He really believes he's the president of the United States. But it won't be long, I said, before he gets to understand and gets to learn who is really the boss here. It's the military. It's the intelligence world. They run things. They've always run things. They have plans. And that is why the first order of business is an extra $52 or $54 billion for the military. They are proceeding with their plans. Their plans are the same as they've always been. America must rule the world. And they're the ones to do it. You think Donald Trump really was in charge of his own brain when he said, okay, fire the missiles? That was a military command articulated by the president. This is what we're going to do. And they tell him, get it done. The interesting thing is that countries like Russia, like Iran, other major countries in the world, China, they understand how insane it is the way this country is being run. And they don't want to provoke the inevitable, because there is no turning back once you press that button. There's no discussion. There are no talks to be had. We've already gone halfway down that road. with this insane act that Trump is going to have to eat. He's going to have to find a way back to sanity and take on the responsibility of trying to smooth things over. But it is the military. It is the intelligence community. They are the ones who press the buttons and say, hey, this is what we're going to do. So now, according to Mike Cernovich, who I saw this report, he puts out his own reports at medium.com at Mike Cernovich. And he explains in his most recent report that the intelligence and mostly the military are demanding 150,000 ground soldiers in Syria. So if that's not an indication to you as to where their heads are at, where they're going, where they intend to go, and they're holding Trump, this is the odd, Trump is the one being held to account here, to them. That's what they want to do. They want to ratchet this thing up so that we have a huge conflagration. They've already moved some of their destroyers in place. They're trying to provoke North Korea to do something so they can have an orgy of war. That's what makes them happy. Even Trump's political base is becoming more and more and more upset. They can't imagine that the military has such a control of their guy. At this time, he should be talking about jobs and building the infrastructure and other things that they voted for. But instead, they see that we are edging closer and closer to war. And recklessly so. I have never seen a situation where people just declare war like this, in the United States. And it is not concerning the major media. It's not concerning people in Congress. Nancy Pelosi was begging and pleading that members of the House and Senate should come back from their two-week hiatus and discuss the matter. they probably thumped their nose at her. It's not happening. So there's this new layer that we have to consider in this scenario. The military, and of course, McMaster himself, is a new guy at the NSC, at the National Security Council. So this is what he brings to the table. It's about war. We have an old regime, Hillary Clinton. Nobody's asking Hillary Clinton, hey, did you transfer poison gas supply, the extra canisters of poison gas that you had stashed in Libya, did you transfer that to Syria? Was that you and Obama giving permission for that to happen? And now you stand up before the people and talk about how ghastly this is. This is terrible. This is inhumane. This is so wrong on so many levels. And you're the one who did it. You're the one who created, you helped to create Al-Qaeda. You helped to create these terrorist groups. Instead, we are counting on people being distracted. So we don't ask the right questions. Therefore, we don't get the right answers. Are we, in fact, headed for major military action that would cause a whole bunch of people's sons and daughters their lives? And they seem certain that the war won't come to us. We could always export our wars, believing that they will never come to us. So we do have some things to discuss here, it seems to me. The role of the media, we talk about propaganda all the time. You notice they are fulfilling their roles. They're not being critical, except of Assad. He may very well have been implicated or have done these bombings, we don't know. But the right thing to do is to have an international body, an impartial body, verify, investigate and verify. That's what the United Nations is for. Let it go through the channels. But when Donald Trump declares unilaterally, yeah, it's Bashar al-Assad who did this, and therefore we sent him a gift of 59 Tomahawk missiles. And we are going to do even more, as Ms. Haley has threatened, the UN ambassador for the U.S., says that, hey, we just stopped there. We're ready to do even more. This is an untenable situation. And with the media basically now winding down its coverage so as not to alarm people, so as not to raise any questions about the accountability of the United States in bringing us and the rest of the world to the brink of a world war, they are distracting us from dealing with these questions. In about another week, it would no longer be an issue. I'll take a break right now, and I want to ask you to address the question of what do you think is happening here? What is happening here? Is this, am I making too much of this? Is this kind of alarmist? Are we asking the right questions? Are we getting the right answers or any answers at all? What are the dots that you are connecting to make sense of what has happened and what continues to happen? And more particularly, what is not happening? Congress is not demanding that everything stop until we get some questions answered about what the United States just did and has publicly avowed that it will continue to do. This reckless run toward oblivion. 888-874-4888 when we come back after the short break. We'll be right back. listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm your Trace Lead, and we're talking about this, what I consider to be a major, major problem. This is a very serious problem. And we're all kind of calm because the media are doing their job. They're calming us down to make us believe that everything is all right, everything is okay. And if it isn't, we have the means, the power to make it okay. Either way, no need to fret. Everything is under control. Ray from Florida, your thoughts.
Yes, hi, Trace.
Hello.
My grandmother was born in 1896, and she used to say, believe none of what you hear and half of what you read. And I think that even if you look at half of the Syrian story, it's still terrifying. In just a few days, we mark the passing of Michael Rupert 4 years ago, and I still look at the blog of an associate of his called Robin Westenra every day, and what he had this morning on Syria was just knock my socks off. So if half of it's true, we might have American armor on the Jordanian border ready to roll in. We had a reprint of an interview with Donald Trump being very cavalier on MSNBC before he was elected about, hey, if we've got nuclear weapons, why can't we use them? I mean, we got them, hey. There's also stories about European armor being moved south to Romania, where I guess they're going to have a little pastrami and then push off towards the Middle East. So, of course, the questions that aren't being asked. I mean, if you were a national leader surrounded by various jihadi factions, and let's say you had poison gas, and let's say you had some intent to use it, why in the world would you drop it on your own people? Of course you'd use it on the jihadis. You know, so this whole story holds no water, and it's just an endless, you know, series of misdirection and obfuscation. So no, I don't think you're fanning a non-existent flame at all, you trees.
Well, that's a comfort. The question is, what we seem unable to get to be heard in those circles or those parts or the segments of the world where we need to be heard, like in Congress and so forth. I don't know why everybody seems so calm. This is a major, major problem that we have here on our hands. And like I said, you know, it could come to us. We assume that it is, you know, we will export the war. The war could be imported without our knowing.
I'm glad you brought that up again, because circling the Earth are all the atmospheric tests of, you know, various nuclear nations that are still circulating in the high atmosphere, and Chernobyl, and Three Mile Island, and Fukushima. And, lo and behold, we've got a cancer epidemic. How much more loading, and I mean that in the sort of like viral loading or bacteriological loading, how much more loading can the biosphere take before it gives out? Because, you know, if God forbid, you know, Trump really went off the deep end in Syria, you know, it's not going to stay there. It goes up in the air and the wind blows it around the world. So there is no, you know, we can be told that there's containment, but there is no containment. Really, what, you know, what would be done there would be done to all of us. And that's true on so many levels.
So, well, we'll keep talking, and, you know, so we get ourselves kind of rooted in what the problem is or the problems are, that helps us make some sense of it. Thank you so much, Ray, for starting us off today. Marie from North Carolina, you're on the air. Hello, Marie.
Thank you very much for letting me talk to you today. How are you?
Fine, thank you. And you?
Well, Well, same here as usual. But I was just calling because I don't know why people keep thinking that it's not about what every war is about. It's all about money. We knew there was something else that was going to come up about it. It's been tested time and time again, no matter which president was in office. It's always the interests of one group of people with their money interests against another one, and sometimes they talk to each other. It's been going on way before we got here. I mean, if you can go back to Howard Zinn's book, and it gives a really good analysis of that fact between the North and the South and the alleged reason for the Civil War, supposedly slavery, which we all know was a lie. But anyway, point I was just going to make, and I'm just going to leave it like this, I would suggest everybody get a Wall Street Journal and look at it before the time of 9/11 and leading up to now, and just take a quick analysis. You don't even have to buy the paper. Just go to a library and get it and look at the analysis between certain companies and track the money, starting with certain companies, you know, the R, for example, or an H, for example, the name of the O and the B and the L, M, for example. I think you know what I mean by that. And it's all right there, right in front of us in black and white. And, I mean, that's what it's always been about. It's those moneyed interests. Like they, and you were talking about the military being controlled. Yes, that's part of it, but they can't do nothing without the interests of those corporations and tax. It's all about the money. It always has been. Unfortunately, we're just like little commodities.
Yeah, but they are doing the advance work for the moneyed interests. They are laying waste to lands that people have designs on. They are helping that Donald Trump's entire administration practically is a division of Goldman Sachs. So the military is the force that achieves many of the things that the wealthy people and the people who control the wealth of the wealthy people. That's what this is about as well.
Right, it is. But not only that, it's also the taxpayers. I get tired of my friends saying, this isn't about us. And I said, well, you keep complaining about how many your taxes, where your taxes coming from, why is it so high and we don't make that much. Well, this is part of the answer, too. We're just, like I said, we're all commodities. And every time I see one little child in, like, the school where I teach with the little uniforms on saying, oh, I was accepted into the program. And I'm like, don't go. I want to say, don't go. We should keep our children home. Let the rich people out there send their kids. They won't send them. Don't, you know, keep your kids home. I'm sorry, but that's the way I feel about it. Keep them home.
But we have to keep track of it. We don't want this to get out of our sight at all. We want to keep track of this. Thank you so much for contributing. Patricia, you're on the air from New York.
Oh, good afternoon, Utrice. I hope all
Hello.
Is well.
And Hanging good at
and good afternoon to the PRN family. As you know, I call into Sunday morning Black Talk Radio. And yesterday, our newly elected Senator Espaillat, first Dominican, was on the radio. And unfortunately, the African-American listeners who called in were absolutely not supportive of this Syria transgression. But what I found more distressing was that I was watching George Stephanopoulos yesterday, and he was interviewing Rex Tillerson. And he actually asked Rex Tillerson to confirm that there were discussions to assassinate the president of North Korea, Kim Jong-un. And he publicly asked this question without any concern or reservation or hesitation about the implications of just even asking the question. So while we may recognize that, you know, privately these are the discussions that are going on, to hear someone ask publicly whether this country has plans to assassinate a sitting president of another country was just amazing to me. It was just remarkable to me. I mean, I just sat there and stared at the TV in just disbelief that he just asked that question quite comfortably.
And this is what they do to elevate themselves within the profession as so-called experts and special correspondents, et cetera, et cetera. And then they go write books, and then they go on a book tour. This is what they do.
Well, the other comment that I made when I called in was that, you know, as a progressive Democrat, as you know, everybody's a progressive Democrat. I said I was very distressed that progressive Democrats were very quiet and very silent on this, and I did not understand why there was no resistance to what had occurred, and there was absolutely no answer. So the Democrats are not going to, it sounds as though they are not going to put up any kind of resistance at all. In other words, they are in complete agreement with this.
It would seem so, because, again, I don't see an organized effort to face down Donald Trump on this at all. I just don't see it. And it seems as if they just pretty much accepted that, you know, well, he seems to be getting favorable ratings on this from the nation as a whole. Why would they want to go up against a guy who's doing so well in the polls? You know, and they are fragmented at this time, without actually considering that it is possible that in taking this on, the party could find its grounding again, and live up to its whatever it sees itself as a party of the people. But I don't see that kind of energy.
But you know, Mutuis, we've been here, done that, and it's called Iraq. Now, unfortunately, you know, they tend to target these very, very small countries that have no ability to resist. But when you start poking a bear like North Korea, that's a different animal.
Well, even the small countries, they are putting their hands on lethal weapons. So it's no longer that they have to have a huge army and they have to have a, you know, a huge military operation. That's what the 9/11 attack was all about. It proved a couple of people could do some pretty serious damage. You don't need a conventional army anymore. The United States is still in the mode of conventional warfare. And warfare has evolved quite a bit. And the way people wage war. They wage war in all kinds of ways. So this is one of the things that the terrorists have taught the world. That, you know, you don't have to go through the thing of getting tanks and training soldiers and doing all, you know, a couple of people willing to blow themselves up. Some guy willing to drive a truck into a crowd. You know, it's somebody willing to just drop a bomb or some kind of some device and sacrifice his life. It's a whole different scheme out here. And that is what I mean by these unconventional ways of, they call them asymmetrical warfare. It's going to be very different. They will come to us. And they will wage war very differently from what we are accustomed to as warfare, you know. So we play with fire here.
Yes, we are.
Thanks. Good to hear from you
Thank
today,
you.
Patricia.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Okay, Gwen from New York City.
Hi, Therese. How are you?
Okay. And you?
I'm okay. There's a lot of points that you made today, and I just wanted you to know that I am one of the people that was extremely upset about the way, not just what Donald Trump did, but the way he went about it. Mm-hmm. Really scares me when a president gets on TV and says, I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to do. And that seems to be running through his entire national policy. He doesn't have to tell the people what he's going to do.
Right, because so he doesn't know what he's going to do.
That's right. So
They have no policy. I'm telling you that.
One policy they do have, though, is that I don't have to tell you what to do, and that should really alarm people, because it is not the president's right not to tell the people what he's going to do. It's our country. It's our money. It's our government. So you know, we and immediately he starts as a dictator. This is really, you know, what we have is a dictatorship now with a guy who's completely inexperienced and just a basic hoodlum. So that was the first thing that scared me. But when I started asking all my progressive friends about it, they reminded me that, well, you know, we have bombed several other countries after we did Iraq without going to the Congress. So when you tell people, wait a minute, aren't we supposed to have this policy where you go to the Congress, you consult with them, and you know, go back and forth, and then you make a decision, people are now accustomed to the fact that we've had at least two other presidents that have not gone to the Congress and have gone ahead and drop bombs and weapons. So that's another thing that's really alarming. I think I've only heard, I think, Maxine Waters speak about this, but it's sort of exactly the way the Iraq war thing happened. And as far as the Democrats are concerned, well, you know, I guess there's so much misinformation out there. I mean, even within my own family where, you know, they saw Hillary as like their blood. And, you know, I have to say that I supported Bernie Sanders all the way through and ultimately made the choice not to vote for her. I voted for Jill Sanders, but only because I knew she was safe in New York. Because I still think, even though Hillary would have been very destructive in a lot of ways, she's not stupid and she's not a lunatic either. But still not much more off the ground than Trump. It was really disappointing to hear her get on TV and validate this this effort that Trump had been dropping weapons. That was really, really disappointing. And then I said to myself, well, I'm glad I didn't, you know, vote for her. But I want to say that I also think that Trump really is the worst we could have gotten. The choices were really bad. Just before my husband died on May 20th, the night before, he said to me, you know, Bernie was this country's last chance. And I remember having so much joy around working in that campaign. I mean, we worked like animals. We went all through, you know, all the buildings, and we even paid for our own literature. But we felt like we had a Roosevelt Democrat at hand, and it was really, really exciting. And, you know, all hopes were smashed when basically the Democratic Party made that decision for us. And there's a lot of bitterness out there. I think the Democrats will not talk about this now, because once you see a baby on TV, and yes, it's a compelling image, but I think it's very interesting, these images, and it's not the first time we see babies on TV being used to manipulate an audience. I also
think it's the first time we've seen anybody representing the United States go before the United Nations and hold the pictures. Remember, here are the weapons of mass destruction.
Right.
Okay.
I just want to say one last thing before I go. I think you know about Nikki Haley, but a lot of people don't know, because she seems so soft and pretty. She's awful. I mean, what she has done to the citizens in her state with Medicaid, that if you have AIDS in her state, you have to wait till you're actually on your deathbed before you are allowed to have any kind of treatment. She opted out of Obamacare. And people are just dying all over the place from illnesses like AIDS, which can be treated in a chronic way now. You don't have to die from AIDS anymore. But you know, she made that effort, that choice, and it was a stupid choice, and it's a cruel choice. And I think that people should not be taken by her pretty face and her soft voice. She does rule with an iron fist, and as my mother said, she really has zero experience in anything international. I mean, the way she came on at this was just so undiplomatic, and yet she's not as thug-ish sounding as Trump. In other words, she looks, you know, she's the iron fist in a velvet glove, and that often can be a lot more dangerous than just seeing those raw set of knuckles coming at you.
Thanks so much for your call today, Gwen. I appreciate it. Thank you all for your calls. And we really have to take a look at what's happening and continue to discuss it. Because I'm a bit concerned that people will go with the flow. You know, the media is very well organized to deliver, you know, an anesthetic nationwide so people can forget things that they ought to remember and remember things that they ought to forget. But we really need to be tied into this reality that we are in a very serious and precarious position based on Trump's action and the apparent inability of Congress or anybody else to rein him in. Thanks so much. Coming up next is it's meditations first. First you pray, and then you hurled your Molotovs. Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuele. You can reach me at leadstories, LEID stories, @gmail.com. Always a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company, and we'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.